Postcards from Beyond, written and narrated by Paul Harris. How meditation brings you to your senses. Over the last century or so, our society has largely operated on the premise that the more you consume, the happier you will be. Has this experiment worked? For a while, it seemed that you really could have your cake and eat it, but it turns out, after all, that you cannot. At the time of writing this book, the world is going through a period of great uncertainty, convulsing with wave upon wave of ever more dramatic calamity: global debt, ecological disaster, political upheaval, and breakdowns in civil order spreading from country to country. Are people happier? A small minority are definitely much richer, that's for sure. These days, however, it seems that even with the latest and greatest technological advances, people are worried more than ever about the future. Why is the world in such a parlous state? A criticism I once heard levelled at modern Western spiritual teachers and writers was that, while they were very willing to talk about how to overcome the problem of hatred, few seemed to discuss in detail that other all-consuming mental cancer, that of greed. In an out-and-out materialist society, the G-word is one that no one wants to hear. It's too uncomfortable, because the unconscious assumption that happiness comes from self-gratification fundamentally underpins so many people's aspirations in life. The Buddha talked about there being a middle way between extremes. We would all like a reasonable level of material comfort and security. But are these global problems a result of having gone too far? Natural resources like rainforests and fossil fuels are being consumed at an alarmingly fast rate. Industrial expansion continues to pollute the Earth's ecosystem, and now the planet is so warm that the polar ice caps are melting. Have we gone too far? It would seem so. Advertising is continually encouraging us to purchase goods and services only a few can genuinely afford. We are encouraged to gratify our desires by splashing out now and paying later. The debt that is inevitably created is even considered to be a sellable commodity and ripe for profit. Have we gone too far? It would seem so. In a world where obesity is rampant, my local fish and chip shop sells chips in regular, large, and American-sized portions, and the regular size alone is enough for two people. Have we gone too far? It would seem so. The trouble with consumption as a way to happiness is that it does not work. Okay, there may be a fleeting happiness or contentment when our desires are sated. The reality, however, is that sensual pleasures are like salty water. The more you drink, the thirstier you get. Indulgence stimulates desire. The effects of indulgence are extremely brief, so you need to keep consuming to assuage those desires. There is also the fear of not being able to service those needs. Just look at how far governments go to ensure that the precious supply of gas and oil is not disrupted. The Buddha stated emphatically that one of the outcomes of unchecked greed is warfare. Buddhism is apolitical. It doesn't take sides, because underpinning the whole training is the enlightened understanding that life could not be different than it is right now. Clearly, there are lessons for everyone to learn with regard to the payback for acting with extreme greed, but as the saying goes, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. The Buddhist meditator, understanding the facts of the matter, does not attempt to police everyone else's behavior, but chooses instead to do something about the greed rooted in his or her own nature in a peaceful way. The Buddha encouraged meditators to practice renunciation. For people with a greedy nature, this is another word that they do not like to hear. As Tapusa, the householder, once said to the Buddha, "Venerable Sir, we are householders who indulge in sensuality, delight in sensuality, enjoy sensuality, and rejoice in sensuality. For us, renunciation is like jumping off a cliff." In reply, the Buddha said that it was necessary to see the genuine drawbacks in worldly desires. This then leads naturally to an understanding of the rewards of renunciation. The Buddha said that becoming familiar with such rewards, the meditator's heart leaps up at renunciation, grows confident, steadfast and firm, seeing it as peace. What is renunciation? It's the willingness to make an intelligent sacrifice. An intelligent sacrifice is one where you gain a greater happiness by letting go of a lesser one, in the same way that you would give up a bag of sweets if offered a pot of gold in exchange. Practicing renunciation can be done in many different ways and permeates the whole of the Noble Eightfold Path. Keeping the five Buddhist precepts, practicing generosity, moderation in eating, having fewness of wishes, and being content with little are all forms of renunciation. At a more subtle level, it includes practicing sense restraint, whereby the meditator is careful, for example, about how much time they spend surfing the internet or window shopping and the like. Renunciation also includes time spent with eyes closed in meditation, and more subtle yet, it includes the willingness to refrain from allowing the mind to wallow in sensual fantasy and other pleasure-seeking thoughts. Through practice, meditators are able to compare the resultant mind states that arise through their experience of indulging or restraining the senses. They find that indulging sense desires results in a distracted mind that is constantly looking outward and lacks the ability to focus. They recognize quite how disconnected and listless they consequently feel, how that lessens their resolve to practice meditation and increases their desire to indulge further. They also begin to appreciate quite how much time, energy, and expense is required to continually service desires, and how pointless and never-ending that process is. Conversely, through learning to restrain the urge to indulge the senses, the meditator experiences an absence of restlessness. The mind is able to concentrate so much more easily. There is a perception of having plenty of time in daily life, generally, which creates a sense of spaciousness and a keenness to engage in more meditation, as well as an overall sense of well-being and self-esteem. Paradoxically, such all-round restraint of the senses gives us a greater appreciation of the immense beauty and mystery of life that occurs naturally all around us. Life becomes its own reward and no longer requires so much artificial stimulation. In developing renunciation, students must be sure not to fall into the trap of trying to deny themselves any of life's little luxuries, in the misunderstanding that it must all be bad. The Buddha said that wherever and however happiness is found, that is indeed happiness. The idea is to make intelligent sacrifices based on an appreciation of why the sacrifices are being made. The line to take is to find the middle ground between the extremes of too much and too little. It would be counterproductive to deny ourselves access to the cultural norms in which we live. There's nothing wrong with owning a television, for instance, but we might limit the amount we watch. Learning to defer gratification is a very good discipline. To get the maximum enjoyment from something, it does make sense to do it less frequently. In the final analysis, greed is an entirely destructive force, creating the most terrible suffering. Unchecked and rampant, it ultimately always leads to corruption, humiliation, and ruination. People entirely caught up with attachment to finding pleasure and avoiding pain at all costs are slaves to their senses and therefore to suffering. The classic analogy is of a clever hunter who sets a trap for a monkey by putting honeycomb in the hollow of a tree. The monkey comes along and puts his hand in the hollow to take out the honeycomb, but the hollow is too small to take out his hand and the honeycomb together. If the monkey lets go, he's free, but his greed does not allow him to do so. He wants the honeycomb so much he cannot bear to let go of it, and therefore, of his own choosing, he remains stuck and at the mercy of the hunter. Grasping sensory experiences in an attempt to find lasting happiness is like grasping handfuls of dust. Ultimately, there is nothing lasting or truly satisfying in any sensory experience, and the failure to notice this is what drives the wheel of samsara. The way off the wheel is to let go of the attachment to sense pleasures, and this can only be done by paying proper attention to reality. In Vipassana meditation, the objective is to observe what the Buddha called the six sensory fields, those of eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, and to investigate their true nature. This is so as to see clearly that there really is nothing in all of conscious experience that can be grasped after. No sensory contact lasts. It is all fleeting, insubstantial, and unsatisfactory. As a meditator perfects his view and intuitively comprehends that there really is nothing of substance in any of the six sensory fields, his attachment to sense pleasures naturally falls away. In place of the constant thirst for more sense experience and the restlessness conditioned by such attachment, the mind is quiet, peaceful, and happy. The madness of greed is finally at an end.